translations. And we'll just 1-8. Sapariyakat Shukama Kayan Mavrinam Asnaviram Shodam Upata Vidham Kavir Manishi Paribho Swayambhur Mutakat Mutodhan Jiradhash Chashkati Vyaha Samavyaha. Had a better book. Translation, such a person must factually know the greatest of all, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach. What does beyond reproach mean?
Beyond reproach. You can't approach him?
No.
Without fault.
Yeah. Without fault. Without, you can't criticize or find fault with. Beyond reproach.
That's a third person.
Yeah. Krishna. Without veins. Pure. And uncontaminated. The self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desires since time immemorial. That's Krishna. The thought. This is a little longer than some of the others. The description of the transcendental and eternal form of the Absolute Personality of Godhead indicates that the Supreme Lord is not formless. He has His own transcendental form, which is not at all similar to the forms of the mundane world. There is an element in this purport, much like this Nirguna Saguna discussion we had yesterday. Because the, as we discussed when we started out talking about the Upanishad, this, the Upanishads speak about the Absolute Truth, and it addresses the Absolute Truth in a way that it indicates the person, but it's at the same time a little indirect, or it's not as directly personal as Sri Bhagavan of Vajra. It's speaking about the Supreme, describing His attributes. So then there's, it's very, the Upanishads are very important for making this clarification of personal, impersonal, personal, impersonal. It keeps coming up. Just as the previous verse, the word ekatvam is there. So in this one, there the expression is there that the Lord is unembodied, without veins, pure and uncontaminated. So the Prabhupada's statement here is that He is, it clearly indicates He is not formless, this mantra. He has His own transcendental form, which is not at all similar to the forms of the mundane world. Now, the forms of the living entities in this world are embodied in material nature, and they work like any material machine. The anatomy of a material body must have a mechanical construction with veins and so forth, but the transcendental body of the Supreme Lord has nothing like veins. It is clearly stated here that He is unembodied, which means that there is no difference between His body and soul. The impersonalists interpret unembodied, obviously, in a different way. So, unembodied, what is the word? Akayam. Unembodied means that there's, like Prabhupada says, there's no difference between the Lord's inside and outside. There's no difference between the soul and the body. Akayam. Nor does He accept a body according to the law of nature, as we do. In the material conception of bodily life, the soul is different from the gross embodiment and subtle mind. I'll be saying it again. However, the Supreme Lord is apart from any such compartmentalized arrangement. There is no difference between his body and mind. Now he said it four times. He's saying, there is no difference between his body and mind. He is the complete whole, and his mind, body, and he himself are all one and the same. We're accustomed to thinking in this divisional type of way, or this is what the impersonalists call the world of duality. Where this thing is different than that thing, and that thing is different than that thing. This is now this ekatvam idea that everything is about the Lord is one. That's also going to be described later on, how his limbs can do interchangeably one limb, same thing as another limb. Which is pointing out that obviously the Lord's form is not material form. In Brahma Samhita there's a similar description of the Supreme Lord. He is described there as Satchidananda Vigraha, which means that he is the eternal form fully representing transcendental existence, knowledge, and bliss. The Vedic literatures clearly state that he has a completely different kind of body. Semicolon. Thus he is sometimes described as formless. And here comes a different definition than the impersonalist state of formless. This formlessness means that he has no form like ours, and that he is devoid of a form which we can perceive. In Brahma Samhita it is further stated that the Lord can do anything and everything with any one of the parts of his body. It is said that with each and every one of the parts of his body, he can do the work of all the other senses. This means that the Lord can walk with his hands, accept things with his legs, see with his hands and feet, eat with his eyes, etc. What's that verse? In the Shruti mantras it is also said that although the Lord has no hands and legs like us, he has a different type of hands and legs by which he can accept all that we offer and run faster than anyone. There's a statement also that the Lord has so many hands he can take away everything. But he also has so many hands he can give you more than you can take, more than you can accept. So with his hands he can accept all that we offer.
So but you know that it's in my judgment or such kind of now, you know, they don't have a body like us. So how can we understand them in the Western with in the first time he is fighting against Vishnu Dev? In the spirit of Vishnu Dev, the service of the Lord was developed in this fight. So if we're shooting towards the Lord, then why we see blood coming out of the own body and experience human this? How do we understand? He says there's no way.
Although the genetic is taken head with a clay pot and with blue blood.
Yes, so how because
pastime.
Yeah.
He can eat with his hands. I mean, eat with his legs. See with his hands and feet. Why can't show blood?
Because then this can be entanglement.
But the Lord does that also. But why did Lord Krishna leave behind a body? Why does the Lord, and as far as getting arguments to the impersonalists, there's plenty of, why did he have Vasa dance? Why did he upon seeing the beauty of Radharani, he sometimes becomes stunned. When Rukmini fell down like a bamboo stick at the suggestion that Krishna would leave her, he was awestruck at her devotion to him.
You understand better, you know, in
speech. But he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's the behavior of an ordinary person. That's that.
So that was the answer we give to the impersonalist. Because of the prowess, the Supreme can do whatever he wants.
Right.
For the sake of argument, when we first...
For the sake of argument.
The one... He will tell us that his embodiment of knowledge, bliss and eternity, and don't expect body, blood coming out of a combination of knowledge, bliss and eternity.
Right.
So how do you answer that?
Well, you answered it already. He can do anything he likes. I said pastime and you said he can do anything he likes. He can make you believe, he can certainly believe himself. And it's a very simple answer. You want to add to it? These points are confirmed in mantra, in the eighth mantra, through the use of the words like shukram, omnipotent. If you don't accept that the Lord has all potency, omnipotency, then there's no way to give you an answer. As a definition, the Lord is all powerful. If you don't accept that definition, our discussion is finished. Your power is very limited and you can breathe. So the Lord is all powerful, he can not have veins and breathe. Because anything he does is just happening by his will. As the material energy is moving that way, certainly the spiritual energy can move that way. He wills it, that's all. And by his willing, being all powerful, all potent, willing means the event happens. If a Christian can understand that, I guess you can understand that. The Lord wanted such and such, and there it was. The Lord's worshipable form, Archavigraha, which is installed in temples by authorized acharyas who have realized the Lord in terms of Mantra 7, is also none different from the original form of the Lord. And this reference to Mantra 7 is describing the Uttama Adhikara. That position is always seeing all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord. Actually, more specifically, it's just six is like that. It can be either, in this case, Madhyama Adhikari or Uttama Adhikari. Anyway. Describing the properly situated spiritual authority. This next point is also very important to understand about deity worship. The Lord, because the impersonalists will see expansions of the Lord, and will certainly also see the deity differently than what's described here. The Lord's original form is that of Sri Krishna, and Sri Krishna expands himself into unlimited number of forms like Baladev, Rama, Nrisimha, Varaha, etc. All of these forms are one and the same personality of Godhead. Similarly, the Archa Vigraha that is worshipped in temples is also an expanded form of the Lord. The Prophet is saying here that just as we read in Srimad Bhagavatam or the Vedic literatures and other places of Lord Ramchandra and Varaha and Balaram and any other expansion of Lord Krishna, the deity is similarly an expansion of Lord Krishna. The sequence of from this one that expands and that the next one that one expands, that's a detail, but the principle that's being stated is the deity form is also, there's a particular installation method and procedure that's conducted by the bona fide acharyas, and when that procedure is carried out, the deity can be accepted and understood as expansion of Krishna directly. Then the rest takes on much more serious meaning. By worshipping the Archa Vigraha, one can at once approach the Lord, who accepts the service of a devotee by his omnipotent energy. The Archa Vigraha of the Lord descends upon the request of the Acharyas, the holy teachers, and works exactly in the original way of the Lord by virtue of the Lord's omnipotent energy. Foolish people who have no knowledge of Sri Ishopanishad or any other Shruti mantras consider the Archa Vigraha, which is worshipped by pure devotees, to be made of material elements. This form may be seen as material by the imperfect eyes of the foolish people of Kanishta Adhikaris, but such people do not know that the Lord, being omnipotent and omniscient, can transform matter into spirit and spirit into matter as he desires. Discussion on this? In Bhagavad Gita chapter 9, text 11 and 12, the Lord regrets the fallen condition of men with little knowledge who regard the body of the Lord as material just because the Lord descends like a man in this world. What's that verse?
Mm-hmm.
astonishing. Param Bhavana. The fourth derived. Such poorly informed persons do not know the omnipotence of the Lord. Thus the Lord does not manifest himself in full to the mental speculators. He can be appreciated only in proportion to one's surrender to him. The fallen condition of the living entities is due entirely to forgetfulness of their relationship with God. Several very heavy statements. He doesn't manifest himself in full. He may make himself available in some way or another, but not his personal identity. Then he can be appreciated only in proportion to one's surrender to him. So that's on the positive side, or the side of spiritual elevation. And then on the material side, the fallen condition of living entities is due entirely to their forgetfulness of their relationship with God. In this mantra, as well as in many other Vedic mantras, it is clearly stated that the Lord has been supplying goods to the living entity from time immemorial. The living being desires something, and the Lord supplies the object of that desire in proportion to one's qualification. If a man wants to be a high court judge, he must not only acquire the necessary qualifications, but he must also acquire the consent of the authority who can award the title of high court judge. The qualifications in themselves are not sufficient in order to occupy the post. The post must be awarded by some superior authority. Similarly, the Lord awards enjoyment to the living entities in proportion to their qualifications. In other words, they are awarded according to the law of karma. The qualifications in themselves are not sufficient to enable one to receive awards. The mercy of the Lord is also required. Ordinarily, the living being does not know what to ask from the Lord or which post to seek. When the living being comes to know his constitutional position, however, he asks to be accepted into the Transcendental Association of the Lord in order to render transcendental loving service unto him. Unfortunately, living beings under the influence of material nature ask for many other things, and their mentality is described in Bhagavad Gita 2.41 as divided or splayed intelligence. You know this one?
41.
Yavasayat Nikabhuji Ekeha Puranandana. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose and the ring is one. Intelligence of those who are irresolute, many branches. Mm-hmm.
It's a not with you, that's kind of that. But when the mercy of the Lord is also required. Sometimes you imagine a situation where a conditioned soul does some pious activity or whatever, and then you get the mercy of the Lord. Then the Lord come and will work for you.
So that's really the product of mental speculation, than anything. His question was, is there a situation where someone performed a pious activity but they didn't get it because the Lord didn't give his mercy? Because the work itself alone is not sufficient. The Lord is the lawmaker, and he's also the law. Enforces the law. He doesn't miss a trick. That exception could be there, actually, in the execution of devotional service.
Yeah, I remember that. Don't consider the force is scientific. But ultimately,
it is
not.
Well, that's also scientific. That as long as one stays within the jurisdiction of the material elements, material laws, then one can expect. See, what one whole religious idea, or so-called religious idea, is that just do your work nicely. Just be pious. Because then you get a good result. So this is saying that that's not sufficient because it's also dependent upon the mercy. Your question is, what if that mercy is withheld? Are there situations where that mercy is withheld? Because if not, then in fact it's automatic. But it's not automatic because it is still dependent upon the Lord executing his mercy, and there are exceptions to the Lord's giving that mercy. And that is, it's another kind of mercy where he may restrict deliberately. For whatever reason he wants to restrict. Because it's better for that individual's advancement in Krishna consciousness to not have that material facility. Or to recognize that their dependency is really on Krishna, not on that material facility. Or that he wants them to have the material facility, but he also wants them to know where it's coming from. And not to get it. So whatever the Lord's purpose may be, yeah, that is that example, but that's the exception is with the devotee. Because the different laws that govern devotional service, those three material laws are no longer active. Cause and effect. Everything is caused thus. Listen.
Can we draw it, or is there any line that can be drawn between scientific and mercy?
Mercy is also scientific.
Because when we talk about scientific, we're expecting that, you know, we have certain elements and we may, by making them interact in such a way, will derive such result. It seems like automatic. If you could be properly experienced, then the result will be there. So, in devotional service.
Well, this, you're just asking the same question over again.
Yeah.
You're using different words, but you're asking the same question again.
Line to be drawn between.
Yeah, the line is that everything is coming from person. Just like there may be laws in this government, you know, worldly laws. So those laws are made by persons. And they're enforced by persons. And they're judged in a courtroom by persons. The Krishna is performing all those functions himself, and he is a person. To make, enforce, and judge the laws is an that's also scientific. It's highly personal, and it's also scientific. Personal doesn't mean unscientific, and scientific doesn't mean impersonal. Scientific does not mean impersonal, or mechanical, or automatic. Things happen in a specific way. Why? Because Krishna sets them up that way. He has ordained it that way. Personal. Not automatic. For that to carry on, it depends upon his will. He can change spirit to matter, matter to spirit, he can change things to leave it from this way to that way. That will.
What kind of meaning is
depending upon the Supreme Person. The normal cases are there and the exceptions are there. And that's also there in science, isn't it? There are phenomena that do not. Sariputta has written a whole book that's publishing anomalies within science. Data that scientists have drawn, they just swept under the carpet. They just don't even consider it because it's abnormal to the normal data. It's abnormal to their theories. It doesn't fit, so they just don't even present it, analyze it, discuss it. They don't change, they don't modify their theory to accommodate hard data. Observation data. You just push it aside. Too weird. I mean, one of them is so weird. He was. There's some data, not even so long ago, I forget. Something about phenomena of frogs falling from the sky. This is observed and recorded, and it was just too weird, so just. There's more to the story, but that's enough of the story to give you some indication that, you know, there ain't no way to explain it, so I just didn't even take any consideration about it. Or the more common things about fossil dating, and there are theories about when this type of man or that type of man first appears, and you'll find in the Origins magazine still this kind of thing. He left out the more weird ones, but the more standard ones, that's sufficient also. There's so many. And then all of a sudden, the finding, the archaeological finding that is the aberration for the data that's unusual for their theory, it just disappears out of the museum. So I don't want to run over time. Anything on what we've read so far in this matter?
I'd like to verify something.
What?
What Krishnaseva said, he was trying to figure out, is it silence or then is Krishna's mercy? Is it, what was that?
Both.
Both, right. Isn't that the science of Krishna consciousness, when Krishna is science, how he should give his mercy? So it's silence.
Yes, but he's saying that you're using the terminology mercy, but why you can't say, no, it's not mercy at all, it's just automatic. If you do this and this happens, if you do that and that happens, that's automatic. So you'll go on talking mercy, mercy, I'll just do this and that will happen and that. And I'll say automatic. And I'll just say your thing is just what you believe. And you'll claim that I'm just, you know, an atheist, dogmatist. So you have your way of explaining things, and I have my way of explaining things, and as far as I'm concerned, you're wrong. It's a stalemate.
You're putting a condition in a situation.
But our answer to one part of the answer is that even when things happen within some order, when the universe is ordered, that does not mean without mercy. Science does not mean impersonal. It's that there can be some prediction that there's an order, that the seasons turn and the time both passes and the sun rises and sets. It's not to say that because those things are going on, there's not the will of the Lord also there. One philosophy is that God just wound the clock up and now it's just running. So God's hand is there, but only to get it started in motion. So that philosophy acknowledges the initial throwing things into action by God. By a higher power. The rules of the game are set up, the laws of nature are set up, and the pitch is thrown. Now this, you know, like a big pinball machine, it's just bouncing around, and the flippers are flipping, and
yeah.
It's just happening automatically.
Lord Chaitanya explains that in the verse, that not even a blade of grass can have the sake of the world.
Right. So, but he would say that it's just an automatic thing. That there's a cause behind the blade of grass moving, the wind blew. And then there's a cause for why the wind blew. There's a high pressure area and a low pressure area, and this and that and that. Then there's a cause for the high and low pressure.
I mean, that's Krishna, because that's Krishna's energy.
That's our understanding.
Yeah.
But so he's asking the question, why can't we just conclude that it's automatic? I mean, you know, the energies are there, and that's just primordial existence. They're just there. You talk about creation, and that's a bunch of hoopla. It's just there. The energy is there, that's all. So then we say, but wait a minute, there's an original cause. Even if then there's original, you know, the flick of the finger that set the whole thing going. Mm-hmm. Even if the originals, the energies are just there, primordial energy, nature, God is nature. What set the whole thing in motion, and what established the laws, and what keeps the laws in effect, intact. Person. Scientific doesn't mean impatient. Law of cause and effect doesn't mean impatient.
Look at a tree. Tree and death actually exists.
Yeah, atheistic. Well, we managed to wiggle away, but there are a lot of people that are continuing to get that thing. I've talked to some scientists that are very sold to the behaviorist idea. I was discussing with Terry Warren, who's a clinical psychiatrist. The whole profession is like that. Field of psychology, psychoanalytic. And you can't build into the whole language and the way, the whole clinical way of viewing. You can't allow variables like God. I mean, it's just not clinical. The will of God or the laws of God, it's just it's behavior. It's conditioned, and you have to uncondition it. And when you relieve this pressure or give that medicine so that you know, this part of the brain stops working and another side of the brain starts to work that wasn't working, it's just cause and effect. Conditioning. I can't have that problem. Whole fields of mass professional fields are built upon impersonalism. And the way, you know, the whole thing with computers, the processing of data and government and enforcement of government, so much impersonal. Everywhere, putting it in anywhere. So, one of the things, just one appreciation about this Ishopanishad discussion is you can deal with the hardcore real factors. That's one level of dealing with impersonalism. To try to personalize the impersonal effect. But the cause is the more subtle stage. The philosophy of life that one operates with. What is the individual? And what is the relationship of the individual to the supreme individual? And how to not understand, how to avoid misunderstanding the supreme as in person. Because as one relates to the supreme, one relates to everything else. That's what Prabhupada says, that the fallen condition of the living entities is entirely due to their forgetfulness of their relationship to God. So as we discuss these points, it's not merely an exercise of tongue and mind and brain. It's to bring into sharp focus what is one's relationship with God, so we can stop being in a fallen condition. Very, very carefully remove the misunderstandings, so it's done with full knowledge and full certainty why this misunderstanding is being removed, why that misunderstanding is being removed, and bring forward the correct understanding. So, one of the things that follows from that is behavior. How to behave if not in this other impersonal way, how to behave with Vaishnavas, how to behave with those who are not Vaishnavas, how to behave with leadership, how to behave with dependents, how to behave with assets, differently than the impersonal structures that we're all trained up with.
Another question. You mentioned that we have to debate how to deal with these people in different ways. How is it that a modern Madhukai goes to Uda Madhukai, he makes no distinction, and then he has to come along?
The no distinction idea is that he's seeing, in fact, simply the spirit soul and the oneness of that spirit soul with the supreme spirit soul, and how that spirit soul is serving Krishna. The Madhyama specifically is performing the function on behalf of Krishna of delivering those souls to Krishna, but the Uttamadhikari isn't doing that, isn't preaching. The Uttama Adhikari, there's a nice description in Purporta Mantra 6 of how the Uttama Adhikari sees and deals with other living entities. The statement is made that he sees that he knows that there is no difference between a vastly learned Brahmana and a dog in the street, in this sense, that both of them are of the Lord. Although they are embodied differently, the Uttamadhikari does see the difference of embodiment, for sure. The fully conscious soul doesn't become unconscious. The fully conscious soul is fully conscious of the differences of bodily configuration. However, he sees, Prabhupada writes, that the Brahmana particle of the Supreme Lord has not misused his legal independence given to him by the Supreme Lord, and that the dog particle of the Supreme Lord has misused his independence, and therefore is being punished by the laws of nature, by being encaged in an ignorant form. So that's the perception. He sees them equally, just one is misusing, one properly uses. And that's the perception, then how he acts. He says that, Prabhupada writes that, not considering the respective actions of the Brahmana and the dog, the Uttamadhikari tries to do good to both. Not considering the respective actions of the Brahmana and the dog, the Uttamadhikari tries to do good to both. It doesn't say how. It doesn't say that he does so by instructing him. But he may, by coming to the Madhyama Adhikari, perform the function of instructing. But from that position, one's actions are completely according to the will of Krishna, period. So as Krishna wills for one to perform that function, one performs that function.
So his relationship is revealed. Oh.